I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Gary Truss, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
So there's going to be a delay. We're recording this podcast in the winter, but we're not going to post it till springtime.
Whoa.
Taping this on Tuesday the 19th. It's posting on the 21st, so winter into spring. March 21st also. This isn't an official thing, but maybe I mentioned this last year too. March 21st. 3, 2, 1. I'm calling it National Countdown Day.
I remember this coming up last year. I
keep trying to make it a thing.
Unfortunately, Congress has yet to pick up that declaration to make it an official holiday.
Celebrate it anyway.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, if they won't do it, do it yourself.
It's a holiday to me.
All right, so let's spring into all the action that's happening this week on the podcast. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to kind of scale things back this week and look at the big picture of the Hot 100 in the past 6 months. As we've talked about a lot, pop music making a maybe somewhat of a surprise return to the Hot 100's apex after so many months of just nonstop hip-hop hits. So we're going to look into what's going on with that. How things have changed, and what are some of the things that are driving that change at the top of the charts. And also, we are going to take a dive into a segment of Billboard that really doesn't quite get as much attention, maybe as much as the Hot 100 and radio and streaming. We are going to look at the touring charts, with touring being such a huge force. I mean, it always has been, but really sort of more and more dollars are being made on the touring circuit. A lot of merchandise being sold. A lot of interesting things happen in that world. We're going to bring in, there's actually a guy in the Billboard charts department named Eric Frankenberg, who oversees all the touring charts. So we're going to bring him in, especially as we talk about some new and revamped touring charts that Billboard is going to launch this week. So Eric will be here in just a few to give us the rundown on all of that. And speaking of rundowns, let's do exactly that with this week's Top 10 of the Hot 100. Here we go.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Yeah. Gone on you with the pick and roll. Younger flame here in sicko mode.
Number 9. Number 8.
I just poured something in my cup. I've been wanting something I can feel. Promise I am never letting up. Money in your palm will make you rich.
Number 7.
I want to raise your spirits. I want to see you smile. No, that means I'll have to leave.
Number 6.
I'm a sucker for you. Say the word and I'll go anywhere blindly. I'm a sucker for you. Yeah. Any road you take, you know that you'll find me. I'm a sucker
for you.
Number 5.
Yeah. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. 100 bands in my pocket, it's on me. Yeah, your grandma probably know me. Get more bottles, these bottles are lonely. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow.
Number 4.
Please me, baby. Turn around and just tease me, baby. You know what I want and what I need, baby.
Let me hear you say.
Number 3.
So you can take advantage of me. Tell me how's it feel sitting up there, feeling so high, but too far away to hold me. You know I'm the one who put you up there. Name in the sky, does it ever get lonely? Thinking you could live without me. Thinking you could live without me.
Number 2.
I stuck by you. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much, or you'd be left in the dark.
And number 1.
Okay, and bringing us out, we have back at number 1 on the Hot 100, Ariana Grande. The song is Seven Rings. This is 6 weeks at number 1. Just retracing the song's journey a little bit for those who forgot what's going on with that. 5 weeks at number 1, straight out of the gate. Dips to number 2 as Shallow takes over after the Oscars. Last week we saw another number 1 debut with Jonas Brothers and the song Sucker. So after that 2-week hiatus, Ariana Grande back on top. Kind of as the momentum settles back into sort of regular patterns for this time of year.
Talking about trends, we said at the beginning, last 6 months or so on the Hot 100. So to recap, last year we had 34 straight weeks of rap being number 1 on the Hot 100. That's a record. 29 of those weeks were by Drake. Since then, script is almost entirely flipped. So 26 weeks since then, 24 of those 26 weeks, pop songs have been number 1. So it started with Girls Like You by Maroon 5 and Cardi B on there. So little bit of hip-hop influence, kind of a segue. But since then, Ariana Grande actually has been number 1 for half those 26 weeks, 13 weeks, 7 weeks for Thank You Next, and now 6 for Seven Rings.
Seven. Okay, now for the devil's advocates in the room, what debt do we give Ariana Grande's Seven Rings to hip-hop? Because, you know, it's not the poppiest song of all time,
except that it has a Rodgers and Hammerstein hook as part of it.
It also got a rap break.
It's got both.
What a comp. That's the answer. I love it. It's got both.
Facts. But yeah, pop songs totally back. It kind of seemed like hip-hop was just on this unstoppable run, and we've seen in the past on the Hot 100, we get these trends, whether it's a women at number 1, a women in the top 5 for a bunch of weeks in a row, and it seems like maybe this will just continue for on and on, and then suddenly it can just flip. So that's what's happened, and trying to look at why this has necessarily happened. Is it too simplistic to just say that Drake had this absolute historic run, but Scorpion kind of had its run, and after that, something else has to take over? And it was sort of organic how Ariana Grande had her rise with just pop culture wise and some of the best songs she's ever put out. And now she's had kind of this Drake-like run herself. But at the same time, that doesn't explain Shallow and Sucker. Some of these sort of out of left field pop hits also being number 1.
She had a Drake-like run.
Maybe not Drake-like, but not record setting.
A Drake-like run. That might be, you know.
Well, in terms of two artists who've basically run the Hot 100 for the last year, it's, for the most part, been Drake and Ariana.
Crazy to think that she's not even halfway to what he did last year.
Yeah, true.
And I just mean that in terms of not, you know, not to knock her, but just, I guess, to, you know, just to, even just now, it sounds like it's like, damn, 29 weeks is like, yeah, that's a long time.
But when you think about those 34 weeks, it's not like when we say rap was in charge. I Like It snuck in. There were a couple number ones here and there, but it was mostly Drake. For this pop run, a lot of it's been Ariana and Maroon 5. So
that's true.
Is it really just a matter of Drake had his big run and now he's stepped aside at the moment?
I don't think, you know, we should ring the hip-hop is dead bell just yet. I mean, even though, yes, number 1 may be hard to get, but plenty of hip-hop songs still hanging out in the top 10 of the Hot 100 from Post Malone, from J. Cole, from, Blueface got up there a while back. Maybe Old Town Road is coming up soon.
Sicko Mode still, by the way, at number 10, we heard. That's 32 weeks in the top 10, its entire chart run. That's 1 week from tying the record for most top 10 weeks ever for Shape of You and Girls Like You.
Yeah. So it feels like also to me, I don't know who's waiting in the wings next, but it kind of feels like this is a great opportunity for somebody to put out, some big superstar to put out a single. It feels like, the chart's kind of settling down. There's not really a whole lot of action at the top where it feels like, you can just see, the next number one on the horizon. So if you're a Rihanna, if you're, Adele, if you're Beyonce, whoever, it feels like the next 2-3 weeks, assuming they all don't come out at the same time, it feels like, number one's kind of there to be taken in some ways.
We were saying, you said a couple weeks ago that Lady Gaga deserves to take the whole rest of the year off, but sounds like maybe she's not doing that.
Yeah, if you see on social media with the whole, sort of blackout recasting, it just says Gaga, I believe, is so people are, of course, wondering what that could mean, and she's got so many things going on. Now, I guess Star is Born has kind of settled down now, but we know she has the Vegas shows that she's been doing, and they're on a break for right now, but that's coming back. And it, weirdly enough, even though Star is Born, you can say, is sort of a Gaga album and Gaga project in itself.
Right.
Her last studio album was Joanne back in 2016. So that's been about 2.5 years. So in terms of album cycles, it actually is probably about time for a new studio album. And maybe with the Ariana Grande model, where we saw how she kind of broke open the traditional pop cycle for a lot of singers, maybe Gaga quickly inspired by that. Lord knows she has momentum to put anything out and, it would be a hit right now. So yeah, I'm really interested to see, Ariana Grande definitely Q1 MVP. But as we round the corner into spring, I'm interested to see who is going to take over for the next 3 months.
Also, as part of all this, so we talk about pop, there's one person other than Ariana Grande who's having an incredible run. He has 4 songs in the top 10, actually 4 in the top 6 as a writer this week, for the second straight week, 4 top 10s as a writer. We mentioned this last week, Lewis Bell, but 4 songs in the top 10, Sunflower, Without Me, Wow, and Sucker, all in the top 10, all co-written by Lewis Bell. So as much as it's been so much Ariana, got to give him credit as well. And really, not just pop, obviously, because it's Post Malone as well. He's really hitting different sounds from pop to R&B. So kind of seems like wherever pop is going next, he'll be a big part of driving that direction.
Yeah. And one other name on his resume I think we should keep in mind. Worked with Justin Bieber a couple times as well, with Post Malone on the song Deja Vu, and also co-wrote Let Me Love You, DJ Snake, which had Bieber on the vocals. So you wonder, whenever JB5 is slated to come out, and yes, JB5, because I'm counting journals in there, feel like Lewis Bell is going to be part of that universe for sure. So the hits could keep on coming for many, many more months.
We mentioned Lady Gaga, Shallow, number 9. You heard it back earlier in the top 10. Fell from number 1 to number 6, now to number 9. But I think the real story now is that the song has just found a whole new life at radio. It's up to number 14 on the radio songs chart. It had fallen off the top 40-based pop songs chart. It's back on there, making huge gains. Looks like it might be on its way to number 1 at Adult Contemporary, back in the top 10 on Adult Pop. So as much as it had been a radio hit, it had been out, it never got to the top 30 on the radio songs chart until it went to number 1 on the Hot 100 a couple weeks ago. And since then, yeah, it's gone all the way up to number 14. So, sort of we knew it was going to get the buzz once it won the Oscar and once they performed it. But
having a longer tail,
yeah,
feels like, than most would think, yeah.
So, yeah, I think nice surprise. Interscope's really working it really like it's brand new. So it makes me really late. I just saw A Star Is Born for the first time this weekend.
We are coming up on about 5 months since it's been out. Yeah.
Every single time I find it harder to breathe, 'cause I need you here with me every day.
Also on the Hot 100, debut at number 75 from Marshmello featuring Church's Here With Me. churches. Marshmello obviously keeps having hits with Bastille in the top 10 with Happier, but I'm a huge Churches fan, so I'm just excited that it's Churches' first Hot 100 hit. Also debuts on the Pop Songs chart at number 35. So Churches have been out for 5 or 6 years now, finally on the Hot 100. This really sounds like this is really their most commercial mainstream pop single. So I think it's already their biggest hit in some ways. So nice to see that for Churches.
I think some people kind of hear Billboard were finding it kind of funny that Marshmello and some of the alt-rock leaning acts have been teaming up successfully lately. Bastille, obviously, you know, you mentioned Happier, how big a hit that was. Somebody said that it seems almost inevitable that a Marshmello Panic at the Disco collaboration is on its way, which, you know, it's like, yes, like there's something in the water that just feels like, give it 6 months and I could see that. And that could, I could see that as a huge hit as well.
Or does he like to work with acts that maybe haven't had that huge pop breakthrough? I think he kind of likes to find acts. Or Bastille had a huge hit with Pompeii, but
I don't know. Just given like this, I mean, even the sound of like what High Hopes was, like you, I could see easily how that could sort of blend into something a little more. You know, it's very beat driven, chant heavy. Like there's like that, just that solid pop backing. So
yeah.
Feels like that could be a ripe collab sometime for this summer.
You know who else Marshmello should work with? You know, a group in the 70s that hit You Sexy Thing? Hot Chocolate. Just so we can say on the chart, Marshmello and Hot Chocolate.
Is Hot Chocolate, are they even still like alive?
He could say.
Are they even
if he just samples it. I just want to see that listing on the chart.
Wow.
Marshmello and Hot Chocolate. Other Billboard charts, Danny Wood of New Kids on the Block. He was one of our guests last week on the podcast. New Kids album, Hangin' Tough, is back on the Billboard 200 at number 18. First time on the chart since 1991, number one. 1989 originally, so deluxe edition with some new songs. Yeah, number 18's top five in sales. So here we are 30 years later. It's one of the top five selling albums in the country. So good to see New Kids back. And this song, number one on the adult pop songs chart.
And my friend said, I know you love her, but it's over, mate. It doesn't matter, put the phone away. It's never easy to walk away. Let her go, it'll be okay. It's gonna hurt for a bit of time.
Dean Lewis, his first number one on the U.S. songs chart. So it hits the top 25 in the Hot 100 as well. All right. So we mentioned we're going to talk touring charts this week on the podcast, bringing in Eric Frankenberg, our Billboard touring chart manager, manages the box score charts and some brand new charts that are starting this week. Eric's going to give us the scoop.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Eric, welcome to the Billboard Charby Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so we've got new touring charts. Tell us what these are. It feels like a whole really big forward move for Billboard.
Yeah, we have a new series of box score charts. We're doing them every month.
So it's going to be, we have seven different charts. We have the top shows, the top tours, the top promoters, and four different segments of venues. And we're ranking them based on the shows that happen within each calendar month. So what we've done for the last 30 years or so for Billboard Box Score is we've had two charts, one for individual shows and one for tours. And it's been representative of what's been submitted to us over the week. We're still going to continue to do those charts, and it's a really great way to kind of see what we're dealing with in real time. The people who are looking at those charts are seeing, they know exactly what we know about what's going on in the touring industry. But these monthly charts are going to be more comparative, more standardized, and you'll get a really good picture of what's actually going on in the touring industry and who's on top.
So this is the first time we can say in this exact reporting period, in this exact month, this person had the biggest tour.
Exactly, yeah. And yeah, they're in this week's magazine. They're online today, and they look great.
So Elton John, he's the star of the first new chart, right?
Elton John was playing consistently throughout February. He grossed over $20 million. He's about 6 months into the Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour, which has grossed over $125 million so far. And he's probably going to be a staple on these charts for the next 2+ years until this Farewell tour wraps up, because it's quite a beast of a tour.
It's a lot of other veterans on the chart too, right?
Yeah. He's followed very closely by Kiss at number two. They're also in the middle of their Farewell tour. Bob Seger is in his Farewell tour. He's at number 13. Also, Michael Bublé, James Taylor, Cher. So there are a lot of older acts on the chart, a lot of older audiences driving the chart this month in February, which is a bit back from the 2018 year-end charts, which was powered by a lot of younger artists, Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Jay-Z, Ed Sheeran, Justin Timberlake, et cetera, et cetera. So you know, the pendulum swing back and forth, but you know, for these high ticket tours, the older audiences with more disposable income, and they've been fans for longer, they're still as big of as big a part of the picture as they've ever been.
I was just thinking about just our touring charts overall, whether you're a veteran act or a newer act. In some way, these charts are the, in some ways, the most impressive to be on, because you can have one hit, maybe you disappear, but you were big for a certain time. If you're making that much money, and I suppose you could be an act that just has a short touring.
A one album wonder.
Yeah, but to get people to come out and spend the money to see you and tour, that really represents a real commitment from consumers.
Yeah, it's about cultivating a real fan base, and even if you're not the artist having, you know, a new album, a new hit every year, if you have that real relationship with your fans, you can make a real career out of this, even if you're not, you know, following the trends and charting on the Hot 100 consistently. You know, a couple of weeks ago, actually, I saw the Elton John show. He's obviously one of the most successful artists of all time. He has, you know, 3 hours worth of huge hits that were very recognizable. The night before, I saw Robin at Madison Square Garden. She hasn't been a fixture on the Hot 100 in over 20 years, but you know, she had 12, 13,000 fans. It was a sold-out arena singing along to her song. So it's really about that relationship with your fans, you know, more so than consistently releasing chart-topping albums.
So we talk a lot about some of the veteran acts and the heritage acts who, like you said, are going to be staples. And anytime they go on tour, even though they say it's the Farewell Tour, it never really is, and they last a long time. Who are some of the newer acts who you think you've seen kind of rise quickly up the touring ranks, either in terms of the venues they're playing or the grosses that they're getting? Like when we think of, you know, now it's Taylor and Beyonce and crew as sort of the top touring forces. Who are some of those new acts who in the next 5-10 years you think are on that level?
Yeah, well, I was looking at kind of the state of hip hop arena headliners a couple of weeks ago. You know, if you think about, I guess a decade ago, it was really just Jay-Z, Kanye, Eminem, who really didn't tour much, and Lil Wayne as far as rap acts that could sell out arenas around the country. And just in the last 2 years, artists that have had their first arena headline tours, Kendrick Lamar, Future, Chance the Rapper, Post Malone, Childish Gambino, now Travis Scott, who I was really looking into. Add to that J. Cole a couple years prior. Drake obviously is now an arena fixture. Nicki Minaj will be out this summer. So, you know, we've talked a lot about in the last couple of years the way that hip hop has taken over in general. It's so dominant on streaming services, but it seems like now with the rap fans are starting to catch up on the touring circuit as well.
And you say this is like pretty technical, but you mentioned like they're all arena fixtures, and I understand arena is like the A class of like touring circuits. Stadiums are still like the top possible venue, most seats, biggest sort of attractions.
Yeah, stadiums are pretty much the highest you can go. It's you would be selling, you know, 50,000 or 60,000 tickets a night, whereas if you're playing an arena, you're selling 10,000 to 15,000 tickets a night, depending on the way that the arena is scaled.
Now we know a lot of Taylors and Medells and Beyoncés, like pop acts, can sell stadiums.
Yes.
Are there any hip hop acts, you know, not joint bill, not tour, that are on that level yet, or who do you think is going to be the first?
No one's doing it right now as a solo headliner. Beyoncé and Jay-Z played stadiums last summer together. Beyoncé can do it by herself. Jay-Z has yet to. He and Eminem did a handful of stadium shows together in 2010, I believe.
Like the Detroit, New York kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. And those sold out. Granted, they were in each rapper's hometown, so I don't know if they could do it around the country. Eminem did it with Rihanna as well, similar to the Beyoncé Jay-Z situation. To be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if Drake is the first one to do it. He sold out his arena tour in the fall, and yes, he was only playing arenas, but he was often doing 3 or 4 nights in each city. So when you add those tickets up, he essentially could have probably been selling out stadiums around the country.
I think it's really interesting because I think people would expect that the top touring forces always sort of line up with who's like on top in terms of the Hot 100 or streaming in that particular moment. And it really is more of a long game that a lot of people have to play. To see that hip hop kind of noteworthy that the level of a hip hop show has not quite gotten to that super cultural mark where they can sell out a stadium, you know, night after night. That's the next frontier, I guess, for whoever wants to be really the king of hip hop on the live circuit.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, the touring industry in general has always been topped by rock and pop acts, but you know, now we're seeing this new wave of hip hop acts. We're also seeing a lot of Latin artists graduate to arena status. We're now seeing K-pop artists graduate to arena status. And in BTS's case, they're actually playing a handful of stadiums this spring.
On my neck, dollars begin, hop off the jet, barely get rest, cash through the mud and I get a check. You selling run on my pants and my chest, Chanel address.
Okay, so I think part of that too kind of ties into one particular artist who I think had a bigger 2018 than anybody could have expected. That's Travis Scott. And when we talk about why probably rock and pop shows can sell out stadiums and do all these massive things, a lot of that is the stagecraft, the visuals, the imagery, the choreography. Seems like Travis with his Astroworld tour got a lot of high praise for what the show and the experience was like, probably more so than any other hip hop concert, you know, or tour that I can remember. Do you have any, you know, intel on that kind of front about how stagecraft and those kind of the performance value is changing, or what the current landscape of that is like?
Yeah, I mean, Travis's tour definitely had pretty bananas production, Drake's as well. I believe he had a Lamborghini flying over the crowd in all of the arenas that he was playing. Kendrick, I know, had like martial artists on stage with him to go with kind of the Kung Fu Kenny theme. It's definitely stepping up, and I think you need to do that when you have that big of a room. Travis Scott's interesting because I think he kind of married that over-the-top arena production with the feel of being in a nightclub. He had people on the floor kind of around, underneath, intermingling with all this circus production. And it kind of had the same feel of the Kanye St. Pablo tour, where everyone's together, moshing together. You know, you feel like it's very intimate, and yet you have all of this kind of over-the-top stuff happening around you.
See, I go to a lot of folk shows where it's one person and a guitar, and that's it.
No flying Lamborghinis coming hey, through on the circuit?
Ed Sheeran's the biggest stadium act in the world, and he is on stage by himself with a guitar and a loop, and that's enough for him. So it can you can do it both ways.
Yeah, when I saw Garth Brooks at an arena show, I think maybe the highlight of the show is when he was just talking to literally one-on-one fans up in the rafters. He would answer people had signs of what songs, and he was having one-on-one conversations in an arena that seats 20,000 people. It became like a show between one person and the artist.
Yeah, well, that goes back to the relationship that these mega huge artists have with their fans and how important that is in keeping them invested and wanting them for them to want to buy tickets the next time they come around.
And just in terms of economics of the industry, I know it's been said before, but you're on the front line of this, Eric, that used to be people would tour to sell albums, and now you kind of put albums out to get people to come to your show because that's where the money is now in touring.
Definitely, and especially with hip-hop acts who are releasing music so frequently, no one's really off-cycle. They're just kind of constantly touring, and especially before you get to the sell out an arena, that's probably the best way to do it, to just keep the momentum going. And then, once you're selling out arenas, you can kind of take your time and be a bit more economical.
I mentioned BTS. You saw them in concert, right? And Trevor, you did too, right?
In September, I saw them at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. And that was, I think, about a week before they did their first stadium show in the U.S. at Citi Field in Queens, which I believe is the show that
Trevor was at Citi Field, yeah.
It was a crazy show. Their fans are really, really dedicated. Even for these Korean language songs, they were singing along every song. When it started, it was as if it was the big hit of the night, and everyone was very excited. What I thought was really interesting about BTS, I had never seen One Direction in concert or Backstreet or NSYNC. As someone who didn't know too much about BTS going into that show, I could not identify the Harry Styles or the Justin Timberlake. Each of the seven members got their own solo throughout the night, and it seemed like each one was met with the same level of enthusiasm. I don't know if you felt the same way, but...
Well, it's funny, because I actually went with a friend of mine who was very big into K-pop and BTS and that whole world. And I think... so she was kind of, like, commentating along the way. So, funny enough that I think... oh, my gosh, I'm not even going to try to say the name, because I know I'm going to butcher it, but... I think he's like sort of the newest member of the group. He's the youngest guy, I believe. She thought that
Jungkook, I think. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it
correctly. Yeah, I believe that's him. For some reason, she thought that he was, I think she thought he was the best dancer of the group for sure. And that, I guess that's sort of populated around in the circles. And I believe he's the youngest and maybe has the highest range. So those things put together made it seem like he, was... If there has to be a standout, I know there's a big push to, keep the group together and not really make those kind of distinctions. But I think she was saying that essentially most people would vote for him to be the star performer. So funny enough, I guess I got that side commentary.
When you have the expertise with you, yeah.
Yeah, I myself probably wouldn't have been able to distinguish that, but it seems like that would be the case.
But clearly not just this isn't totally online. The fandom is that intense for BTS.
They're out there at the shows, and it was their first stadium show in the U.S. when they played in Queens, and then in May they're going to do two shows in New Jersey, very close to New York City, as well as two in L.A. and two in Chicago. So it's spreading.
MetLife Stadium and
stadiums. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and that'll follow. They're on SNL next month. They have a new album coming out, so it doesn't seem like they're slowing down anytime soon.
Craziest thing to me about that whole Citi Field experience was that. I mean, I'm sure somebody must have, but I really, oddly enough, didn't see like anybody like leave for any reason. Like, I don't have any, like, it's like no one went to the bathroom. No one went, I mean, there really wasn't any food open or anything like that, but even to just like take a break, walk around, it was like everyone was in their seats for the whole 2 hours, screaming along to every word. And if you haven't been, if you didn't see the show, they also have these like glow sticks that are Bluetooth controlled. So the colors like within the glow stick can change like during the course of the song. So, you know, there'd be some songs, I guess, that like have a, you know, there's like a purple symbolism with them. Some they make like a rainbow through the crowd. So there was kind of a cool interactive feel with that, that the crowd felt like they were, you know, everybody, you know, to make a rainbow, everyone has to play their part and be, you know, waving their flags and everything in the same way. So I think part of the intimacy, even though it's a stadium level show, things like that, that really help connection.
I think Taylor Swift had similar technology at the Reputation Stadium Tour last summer. It kind of reminds me of like when you're watching the halftime show at the Super Bowl and they have people kind of
showing, you know, the cards or something.
Yeah, they make one love with whatever glow sticks they have, whatever that is.
So, right.
Yeah,
could be the new wave of interactivity at stadium shows.
It's not a brand new phenomenon, but stadium shows have been much more on the rise, right? I remember when I saw Bruce Springsteen played Fenway Park for the first time back in 2003. It was such a novelty that a show, well, certainly at Fenway for being as old as it is, but kind of felt like an act playing in a baseball stadium was sort of new. I guess now it's not that surprising at all.
Yeah, and kind of on the same theme that we've been talking about for a while, it really was just Bruce and Bon Jovi and the Rolling Stones and U2 that could do that. But I think now that younger artists are seeing that it's attainable, if, you know, if Taylor does it, Beyonce wants to be able to say she's done it too. And so does Ed Sheeran and so does Drake and whoever's going to follow. So I think we could see it, you know, just get bigger and bigger.
Other artists you've been writing about, Erica, has been doing really, really well touring-wise, and brings up the whole angle of talk about advances in touring. Vegas is not for acts at the end of their careers anymore.
Not
everybody's doing
Cardi
Vegas.
B about to.
Yeah.
I mean, Cardi B doing a Vegas residency. That feels like what?
Yeah,
Drake's doing some stuff too, and there is a separation between, you know, the Celines and the Shares of the world and some of the hip hop and electronic artists that are doing residencies. A lot of the DJs who do it, it's more of, you know, they're in a nightclub. People are going for the experience. It's not as much of a seated theater concert as, you know, when you're going to see Elton John or Jennifer Lopez or you name it. But yeah, I mean, the fact that Lady Gaga is there in, you know, in the middle of a real high point in her career is a real marked difference from people going to Vegas after, you know, they've seen the best years of their career.
And Enigma, it's basically two shows in one, depending which one you get.
Yeah, her residency is a two-parter. There are the proper Enigma shows where she's running through her biggest hits, and it's kind of the Lady Gaga show that you would expect, very over-the-top production, big electronic and pop sound. And then she is doing the jazz and piano shows where it's basically just her at a piano. She does, I believe, some kind of stripped-down jazz versions of her own songs, but she's also doing a lot of kind of the classic American songbook, a lot of the stuff that she was doing when she was touring with Tony Bennett. And so she's kind of alternating between those two shows while she's there. She's done 11 shows so far. They've performed unbelievably well. She's essentially outpacing anyone who's ever performed in Vegas at the beginning of their residency. She's making about $1.5 million a night. So it's pretty stunning.
I can't whistle. My lips are dry. But woo!
Yeah, she opened with a couple weeks around the beginning of the new year, and she'll be back in May and June and then later in the year. And supposedly it's going to continue throughout 2020 and maybe 2021.
And you talk career numbers. Fifth woman ever to hit a $500 million tour.
Yeah. Madonna and Celine have both grossed over $1 billion. Taylor Swift will get there on her next tour. Beyonce's in the neighborhood of $750 million, and Gaga just crossed 500. I should give a shout-out to Pink. She's grossed $499 million in her career, so she'll be there the next show she plays.
Did you guys both see Star Is Born? I was telling Trevor before, I just saw it for the first time this weekend.
I saw it on opening night in theaters. I had a comfy chair. I was there at 7 p.m. after work.
I waited for it to be nice and cheap.
There was a lot of hype around it. I felt like it was necessary.
Trevor, when did you see it?
I just saw it a few weeks after it came out on a weekend.
Okay. What did you guys both think?
I thought it was good. I'm a very big Gaga fan. I'm going to Vegas to see her show in May. I prefer her as an artist over an actress. I thought the music in the film was phenomenal, and I got chills when she sang "Shallow." But you know, those were my favorite parts.
Yeah, I remember liking it. I mean, it's hard to live up to the hype that it had going into it. I've loved for months before, you know, it had been screened places, and I mean, people knew it was going to be a good film, but I guess, you know, they always make it sound like it's going to be the next Citizen Kane or something. So I thought it was very solid. I mean, yeah, I think all the right elements that people are talking about, the direction was good, the performances were really good, the music, of course, and the supervision was fantastic. So yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say it's my favorite film of last year, but I would give it, you know, a top 10 for sure.
Yeah, her acting I thought was great. I know she's become an accomplished actress, but just even exceeded expectations. Yeah. So she made the character really likable.
Yeah, and after the success of the film, I imagine she will have her pick of the litter. She'll be able to pretty much do anything that she wants to going forward.
You know I can't let you slide through my hands. Yeah, 'cause wild horses couldn't track me away.
All right, any big tours coming up that are going to be on your radar and on the touring charts going forward in the next few months?
Yeah, I mean, in addition to BTS playing stadiums, Blackpink, who's on the cover of Billboard a couple weeks ago, another K-pop group, they're going to be playing arenas for the first time in the U.S., so I'm very curious to see how that goes. I think, I think it'll be pretty successful. On the stadium front, I know the Rolling Stones are back this summer. A mix of stadiums and arenas. Paul McCartney is going to be on the road this summer, so some of those veterans are going to be back in the mix this summer. Ed Sheeran is continuing the Divide tour. It's going to play through August, and we're kind of tracking it show by show. It's really in the running to possibly become the highest grossing tour of all time, so I'm really excited to see where that ends up. I think it might be a nail biter.
Well, whenever we ask you each week what you're writing about, I never know if it's going to be someone brand new or Rolling Stones.
I like to mix it up. I you know, want to give a full spectrum of who's touring and who's on the road. And some of the bigger numbers come from the veteran acts and the legacy acts. But it's really good to know, you know, what the future of touring is looking like and the rise of hip-hop and K-pop and Latin music and some of the younger pop acts. So, you know, check in every week and see what's going on.
All right. Eric, we'll have you back, if nothing else, after you see Gaga in Vegas. Give
Please.
Us a review of that.
Please. This was fun.
All right. So that's this week's Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
Eric, what song Lady Gaga performs are you most looking forward to hearing live and in person? And the answer cannot be "Shallow."
It wasn't going to be. It still feels kind of like a cliche answer, but I think her best song is "Bad Romance." I'll have my paws up. I'll be singing along.
Well, we're going to give you a chance right now to sing along to it as we're going to wrap things up with that track. Be sure to join us next week. We're going to talk all things Hot 100. We're going to see if Ariana Grande's 7 rings can get 7 weeks at number one and plenty of other chart happenings. Until then, this is celebrating its almost 10-year anniversary. Hard to believe. One of Lady Gaga's best tracks she's ever recorded. The one, the only, Bad Romance.